Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And who are you?
I am Simon London.
Simon London!
Hey,
I can't not say your name like I'm the X Factor man, because it's just such a good name. Simon London!
And we have to, because when I wrote the email to Simon London, I did do your name in lowercase, but your last name in uppercase.
Yeah.
You do feel like saying Simon London!
Anyway, Simon London.
Yes.
If that is your real name.
It is my real name. It's my real name.
What a great name. Would you introduce yourself to the listener? Who are you, Simon London?
Who am I? Well, I am what they call a jerk of all trades. I've been a journalist.
Ooh.
I had a column in the Daily Mirror when I was in my early 20s. So I was a TV critic.
Ooh.
On the Daily Mirror. Then I became a TV presenter. So I was a TV presenter up until around about 2000. I used to do little bits on the Lottery Show, and I did City Hospital with Nick Knowles and Gabby Roslin.
Nick Knowles.
And Susie Perry, lovely Susie Perry, and Phil Swanfield.
We love you, Gabby Roslin. I know you're listening.
Yeah.
then I became a producer, worked on the Graham Norton Show. And then I just did what everybody else does, just become a producer for hire. So comedy and entertainment, and I did that. I've done that really since about 2003. So a bit of everything, bit of writing, bit of
just presenting. Being Simon London. You
just being Simon
around
London.
The world, being Simon
I,
London.
Indeed, yes.
And being hilarious.
I try to, yes.
You know, that's,
yes.
that's part of Simon London.
Everybody knows you, because we met you, Simon London, on the Gabby Roslin. We were going to say your name 55 times.
I love it so much.
Yeah. We met you on the Gabby Roslin show, the BBC London show.
You're with your brother, Greater. And your sister, Southeast.
Yeah.
He's never had it before.
No, never. My aunt, Tower of.
But I remember we said, oh, we put a photo of us on the Instagram, and everyone's like, is that Simon London? Everyone fucking knows you. Yeah. Like, you've worked with everyone in the town.
I've worked with lots of people, and I've worked with lots of people and try to stay in touch with lots of people, because social media is good now. Mm. You can stay in touch with people. I do make the mistake of thinking they're all my friends, and a couple of people I've worked
with. Hey, Tom Cruise.
I've gone, oh, you couldn't do this for me. And they've gone, oh, nice. You just suddenly got in touch after 6 years. And I've gone, but I liked your photo the other day. We're friends, aren't we?
That's how it works.
Social media's for.
So, I try and sort of stay in touch and talk to people like that. Because if you worked with somebody and you've had a laugh with someone, I say to my son, if you're in a lift and it's going, you're in a tall building and the door's open and somebody steps in, who you know and you've worked with, you want to be able to go, hey, how are you? Not that awful science of, oh, God, I screwed this person over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to try.
Oh, remember that time you taught me to photocopy my tits at the Christmas party? Nobody
they
wants
never
that.
Look as good. I've done it before. Yeah. I photocopied my tits and I'm like, it just looked like two enlarged fried eggs with
how?
Their hair.
Well, why did you?
Why did you not?
Spider. A squash spider. Yeah, why do people do that? Why?
It was time to do. It was a different time.
It was the late 90s. I had been drinking a lot of brandy and Fanta that night, which I'd call a Fandy.
Ooh.
I think it'll catch on with the youth.
I think it will.
Very classy. This is the kind of culture Australia brings to this country.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. You know? Well, good job you didn't have Southern Comfort. We know what you get up to when you've had that.
Oh, I'm trying to think what that would be called
it's
as well.
Not
a,
very
a sandy a com a com a cat's a com
something.
Move on.
Put it this way: a Southern discomfort.
Wrong time.
Anyway, let's move on to family chat.
Family chat, yes.
Who are you, Simon London, and who is your family?
So are we talking about the family I have now, my family that how do you want me to answer
whatever you like.
Not a lot of people know this, because it never really comes up, but I was adopted at the age of 8.
Right.
Oh. So I was in children's homes up, well, one children's home in particular in Woking, to the age of 8. And I did have a half sister. We kept on being fostered. And then due to various reasons, not my fault, we get sent back to the children's home. And then finally, the last people who went, well, we'll give it a go, see whether we can foster them with a view to adoption. They fostered us. Unfortunately, my sister had to go back to the children's home, but they kept me, and I was adopted by them officially when I was 12.
Wow.
And were these the Londons?
These were not the Londons. That's an even more weird story. So one of the reasons back then in the 70s, because I am that old, back then in the 70s, they wanted to split us. They weren't sure whether they could split me and my sister up. But then my parents, my mum and dad, my adopted parents went, well, it seems a bit unfair that he keeps on having to go back to children's home. Can we look into this? So they looked into it and went, they're half brother and sister, so we can actually split them up. And at the time I was called Simon Edwards, and they found my birth certificate and went, his name's Simon London, his real name's Simon London, she's an Edwards.
Oh.
So the next day I had to go back to school as Simon London, and everyone went, you're from the children's home, now your name's different, and blah, blah, blah. And I went, I'm never, ever changing my name again. And I said to my wife when we got married, you don't have to change your name if you don't want to, because it's a weird thing.
It is, and especially...
But she did, though, because your name's London.
Yeah.
She's Mrs. London. Yeah.
That's her name was Poo Bags. I'm changing that. but it's a weird thing to change your name, isn't it?
Yeah. And that young as well. That's...
Yeah.
And you have no choice. Someone's just gone, no, tomorrow...
Yeah, you're going to be Simon London.
Mm.
And so, yeah.
So children's home in the 70s. I mean, that must have been all the lols.
Oh, it was great. No, it was... you know something? It was kids. The weird thing about kids, just sort of go, that's mum, isn't it? And that's kind of what kids do. So I can imagine in Victorian times when they went, go up that chimney, kids went, oh, that's what we do. We're kids. We go up.
Yeah.
So you kind of don't realise. I remember one of the first things my new parents did, they went, he seems a bit bright and he's not getting on at school. Let's send him to boarding school, because that's not like a children's home at all.
No. Full of warmth and love.
So I went to boarding school. I met the first guy, the first kid, around about 11 years old, and his mum and dad were divorced. And I kept on saying, did your mum and dad argue? And what happened? Did they ever, like, fight? And could you see them fight? And he went, why do you want to know? And I said, I've never met anybody who's been whose parents are divorced. He went, you're black and your mum and dad are white and you've been in a children's home. You're the weird one.
And you're like, but my name is Simon London.
I always think, you know, kids just go, you know, you don't realise that families are weird until you get to about 16, 17, and then you go, all families are weird, aren't they?
Yeah. And did you go to boarding school? Was that close by? So you sort of had this new family and they you go away now.
Yeah, they tell me it was for my own good. It wasn't, we can't send them back to the children's home. We fought them to keep them. Let's send them to boarding school. It was quite close. It was kind of like about a 45-minute drive away.
Yeah.
And it was a bit weird, again, in the 70s, the first time I got there, and everybody, they're really posh, and they're really, really horrible. And I remember the first fight, somebody said something to me, and I stood up, and everyone went, fight, 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 outside, take your jackets off. Oh, Simon's just picked up a jug and smashed it in that kid's face. And I was like, yeah, why do we have to go outside? Because in the children's home, you just hit people with the biggest thing you can find. And everyone's like, no, we don't do that. We don't do that at boarding school. At boarding school,
we'll be so angry.
We take our jackets off, we make a circle.
What
are you doing? Simon, what are you doing?
Well, Boris hasn't even put his knickerbockers on. For goodness sake.
He needs stitches. What are you doing? So my dad was called down a few times. And back then in the 70s, it was sort of, I mean, they were calling me sort of the most awful, awful names, and they just basically went, he's just got to grow up and learn that's what happens in life, you know? And my dad basically said, the best advice ever, he said, if anybody says anything, hit them and hit the people you laugh as well. And it was kind of good advice and also awful advice because I turned into this horrible bully at school. But what I would do is somebody would come in and say something and all the other kids would just sit there going, I'm not going to get a jug or plate smashed over my head. So so nobody said anything, but I couldn't wait to leave and get to university. But my mum and dad are lovely. They're really, really lovely. Still alive, in their mid-80s, live down in Dorset. And,
lovely. I love Dorset.
You're not coming.
What? Are you near the nice bits? I love all of Dorset.
It's
too nice for you.
Yeah. So that's the, and I have a sister who's 8 years older than me. She's their biological daughter, but we're very, very close, and she's lovely.
Yeah.
And then I'm married to Jo, 20 years this year. She's,
I thought you were going to say 20 years younger. I was like, oh, get out.
No, I mean, if my life is going to plan, the next Mrs. London is being born round about now. No. So I'm married to the lovely Jo, and we have Elliot, who is 18 in August. So yeah.
Oh my god! I just want to go back a little bit because I don't know if we've had someone on the podcast before who was adopted.
Yeah.
So was there like a big moment where they told you what they were going to adopt you? Is it like in the movies?
Sort of a bit, where they kind of go, "How are you enjoying living with us?" And you go, it's okay.
Well, if you check my TripAdvisor review, the bathroom could be a little cleaner, and the breakfast was a little cold this morning.
I've got my own
mini
room.
Mini kettle was not great.
I've got my own room, which is good. Yeah, nobody's fighting. I think I could grow to like this. And also, you're very posh, and we have napkins, and we have more than one set of knives and forks. Because that was really weird. Because the children's home, we weren't posh at the children. We really weren't posh at the children's home. My mum and dad are kind of very upper middle class. They're very sort of, you wouldn't look at them and go, oh, those people will adopt black kids.
You said that sometimes you felt like the world's whitest black guy.
Yeah, because I guess in a way, at boarding school, there were no other black kids really. And then, of course, you just gravitate to what you know. So I went to university and made good friends. I had a really good mixed race friend there, but generally the people at university at the sort of late 80s it's still the kind of slightly middle class people who are going to university, and they are of course white, most of them. And then you move out and you're with a group of friends. So I didn't really know lots of other black people. I was meeting at the time would sort of, you know, they'd sometimes go, oh, you're not really black, and I'd go, Believe me, they still call me all the same names.
I think you should have been like, shit, has anyone got a mirror? It shit, is a bit like, what do you mean?
So I was trying to explain this to somebody, saying I kind of get all the, I'm really lucky because I get all the privileges of being upper middle class, but all the great stuff of racism as well. So, you know,
and everyone's friends.
Yeah, I'd still kind of go out to sort of, go out, have a really good time, then be with a girl and go, we'll just hire this cab. It's just driven past. We'll get this one. Oh, it's just driven past again. Oh. You might want to put your hand up.
Yeah.
Because you're white and they'll stop for you. So it is a weird, you have this weird duality. And at the same time, you kind of just have to get on with it. Because my mum and dad are very much that kind of British, you just get on with it. You don't kind of have to worry about that.
Keep calm, carry on.
Basically.
Smash a jug over everyone's head. Punch that guy, and that guy.
Yeah. So you sort of, so yeah, I mean, it's only as I've got older that I've kind of, I think once you have a kid and you sort of think, what's life like for him, that you think about it a bit more, like your identity a bit more. I never want to be that person going, oh, they're racist or this person's racist. And I get very angry about that. That's sort of stuff that, you know, Liam Neeson's racist. Well, no, he's not. He had a bad moment in his life and he tried to understand it, and you can't just point at people and go, they're racist. My nanny, who was obviously, as in my grandmother, who's obviously white, my adoptive grandmother, you know, but my granny wasn't racist because she used to go, "Oh, my daughter's adopted a coloured boy." It is a weird thing getting your head round.
And when you, because when you talk to your son about your upbringing and things like that, are you really conscious of giving him the full, honest truth about
just playing this podcast? I think
sit down, son, have your first beer.
We talk
let
about
these women
it.
Tell you all about it.
Let me whitesplain this.
I haven't been able to talk to you about this, but these two women. I kind of tell him about it in some ways. The thing that I most sort of that I say to him all the time is, it is going to be harder for you. It is, you're a mixed race kid. And I saw this really good play once where there was a great line in it where somebody said, "Oh, you black kid." And he goes, "I'm not black, I'm mixed race." He goes, "Oh, when Obama stops being president, you'll go back to being black." And which is a really great
amazing
line.
Yeah. But what an amazing sort of analysis. You're okay, you're safe for this time, but your time will pass.
And so I've always been, you know, there's a big joke, it's not that much of a joke. My wife Jo is very, very soft on Elliot, and I'm very, very hard on Elliot. And I always say to Jo, it's because I know it's harder out there, and that whatever anybody thinks, he is black and it will be harder for him. So I try and kind of say to him, you sort of have to work a little bit harder, you have to turn up on time. People will look at those things and use them against you, and it's not your fault, but. So we talk about that sometimes, but he just loves hearing stories about me smashing jugs over people's heads.
Of course he does.
This is it.
And also, he's a black young man in London right now.
Yeah.
Called London.
Yes.
London in London.
You love that, don't you?
Yeah, we keep saying it. Like it. But, I mean, in 2019, this is the reality. And I went to a talk about motherhood, and there were some mothers who said, "Look, I have black sons, and they will get stopped and searched five times more than the white guys. They're, you know, exactly what you were saying about, like, they can't hail a cab, all of those sort of things. We need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend it's all nicely. This is a fucking reality."
Yeah. You know, oh God, this guy on Twitter was arguing with me when I was saying about this thing about Liam Neeson going, so lazy just to say Liam Neeson's a racist, let's stop him from ever making films again. If you can't have
although
these conversations...
Although we don't need another Taken. I mean, we can all agree on that. And this is as good a reason as any, I feel. Yeah, like, just stop that happening.
That's it, yeah. We will find him and we will stop those films.
He has a particular set of skills and they are they are being a racist when he's younger.
No one needs to see Qui-Gon Jinn again. No one needs another Star Wars.
You know your Star Wars, don't you?
Oh, I used to be a prequels apologist, but that's another story.
Get out of your own house. Sorry, we were talking something.
No, I think it's really,
You're arguing
important.
The guy about Liam Neeson.
Not to be hysterical. And then the easiest thing that people come back is, oh, well, you're an Uncle Tom, or you're this, or you're that. But I think that if you don't have grown-up conversations about race and prejudice and difference and everything else, then you just end up with Brexit, Trump and Tommy Robinson, because nobody wants to say anything. Everybody really wants to jump down to people's throats. So I really hate all that, because I was kind of brought up by my mum and dad to sort of question everything, talk about everything, and it while still being aware that people will look at you and judge you a certain way, and that you kind of have to work harder to sort of go, well, let's have a conversation about it. Let's discuss that. So.
Well, let's do it. Let's do a hot potato, as Mrs. Martin would say. And now you've just laughed. Now I'm going to be serious. But so a big thing that worries me. So how old is your lad?
He's 17, 18 in August,
Yeah. So my lads are 7 and 4, and they live in Southeast London, obviously. And I'm really worried about the stabbing. There's a secondary school down the road. They're statistically likely to go there because of where we live. And there was a lad that was killed there a few months ago. And I'm like, I don't know what to do about it, or if there is anything I can do about it from my position and my privilege and what...
Solve the world, Simon
London.
What
I'm saying, Simon London. Like, solve the knife crime crisis.
This is a really long list you've got here. North Korea, FGM, and okay, right, I'll work
Trump.
Through.
Nice little wine, Simon.
Yeah.
The knife crime thing is really, really difficult, isn't it? Because it's this circle of kids are now scared, so they're carrying knives because they're scared that they're going to be stabbed. Yeah. Then at the same time, they're brandishing them, and they're kind of like saying, oh, I've got a knife, so you're not going to stab me. Oh, you've got a knife as well, now I'm being stabbed. And there's this real vicious circle that is going on. To go back to the original question, I'm worried, you know, my son goes out and, you know, when he comes back in, I think, well, I don't want to hear about him being on a night bus or late or standing in a corner or something like that happen. And I think actually, when you hear about what people are trying to do, they're saying that it needs to be, instead of people being excluded from school and seeing other kids or older kids or gangs as sort of a way out to try and to sort of try and replace that sort of feeling of camaraderie, and that sort of having a knife is just sort of part of the uniform or part of what you carry. If you can go back into that and break that down, I think that that's the way to start. But I'm also wondering whether it's a case of, you know, trying to get people. I don't know whether you had this at school. I remember at school, like, a policeman came in and showed us what happened to people who played on the railway tracks.
Yeah.
And it just scared the hell out.
Yeah, it's like the worst thing. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's
like AIDS and the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
That was that time of just kind of fucking, we all shat our pants.
Yeah. I mean, and if you went to university between 87 and 94, nobody would sleep with you because of AIDS. That's why they wouldn't sleep with you. I just want everybody to know that. It wasn't because of me, it was because of the AIDS commercials. I was incredibly attractive and considered a catch in some areas. But because of the AIDS commercials. Sorry, but I digress.
No, do walk on.
No, but I just wonder whether, you know, we need to hear. You kind of sometimes see on BBC Breakfast some guy going, I'm working with gangs now and I used to carry a knife. I wonder if it needs to be more than that. I wonder whether actually you need to be taking kids who have been stabbed, mums who have lost kids, and whether it is that kind of shock tactic that you take into schools and go
to scare the shit out of them.
Yeah, completely. And because it's happening through all the classes, everyone wants to kind of say it's a working class thing, it's a black thing,
but it's happening.
It's happening all
something
over.
Something happened in Dulwich the other day. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there you go.
I mean, yes.
If it's touched Dulwich. You know, it's like that's kind of like when Mordor comes to the Shire.
It's like Valhalla is in danger. Ragnarok is here. Dunwich is breaking down.
But I wonder whether it's about that. I wonder whether you kind of, you know, you need people to go in and go, you see the scar going down my face. You see this that was nearly punctured.
Yeah.
That was a knife thing. That's what it's about. And going from there, I don't know whether it's more community policing. I don't believe that. I think kids listen to other kids.
And kids listen to police, do they? No. I mean,
and kids are smart. They're not, and they don't want to be patronised. They don't want a big old white bloke in their policeman's uniform going, don't stab you. They're not going to listen. No.
Yeah, so the scary ads when we were kids were the blind kid with the fireworks. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Yeah, we're not laughing.
No, we're laughing at the time and the advert. Yeah.
There was a kid and he had a firework and it went off in his hand because someone chucked it off him.
Oh, God, it was awful.
And then at the end of it, he turns around to camera and he's blind. And whatever goes, he's blind, the kid is blind. I'm never playing with, even now, as an adult, lighting fireworks in the garden.
Yeah.
I light it and then run, get on a tube.
I must have misremembered this, but I'm sure there's one where the child had a sparkler and then suddenly he only had two fingers.
Yes.
Like it burned awful.
Oh, God.
And then it was like, always put the sparklers in a bucket. Like, oh, because that will save your fingers.
But I think that may be a good start. That may be a good start. I don't know whether.
I think that's true for everything. I think we've all got a bit light touch.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. And I just wonder whether that may be a way to start not putting kids with other kids who are going to, I don't know, who are sort of going to sort of fill that gap that's missing, and in a bad way. I wonder whether it's about sort of seeing how this stuff affects people like you.
How much do you think it is to do with poverty and people feeling disenfranchised and people, young people having kind of no hope, and they've got, I'm in this shit situation, and there's, you know, life loses value maybe.
So much of that. I'm going to digress, but bear with me, okay? You remember Raoul Moat, that guy up in Newcastle, Gaza took a fishing rod and chicken to when he was on the run? When he shot
That's your best memory of that incident, yeah.
Because that's how people remember Raoul Moat. But Raoul Moat was this sort of bouncer who apparently kind of did loads of steroids and everything and was very kind of on edge. And his story was he caught three policemen in his club, in the toilet, doing drugs. He kicked them out, and then they had a vendetta against him. And that sort of got worse and worse and worse. And in the end, he snapped, shot the policeman, went on the run, blah, blah, blah. What's interesting about that Raoul Mate story, I was reading about it, I'm obsessed with true crime. I love true crime.
We could spend 4 hours talking about it. Yeah.
He does what he does to the policeman. He goes on the run. Somebody sets up a Facebook page and 50,000 people follow it going, go on, Raoul Mate, you show the police, you're on the run. And I think David Cameron stood up in Parliament and went, Facebook, you're really naughty and you should take that down. We can't believe that's happened. But actually what you should be going is, what is happening up there that all those people feel that they can get behind this guy who's shot a policeman? And reading about it a bit more, the people in Raoul Mate's estate said, oh, the reason that we are behind him is if anything happens on the estate, the police turn up. If there's a burglary, they turn up. They search your stuff. If you've got a bit of, like, blow or whatever, they take your cannabis off you. If they turn up, if there's a burglary, if they turn up, they might turn up in 2 or 3 days' time. They don't give a monkey's about you at all. And actually, that's why we hate the police and that's why we love Raoul Mate. And that's a really, really interesting story that was mirrored when sort of those women who were the sex workers being murdered in Ipswich. Do you remember?
That's huge.
And they kept on going out to work and the police were saying, stop going out to work, there's a serial killer around. I think Lynn Barber did an interview with them and some of them said, well, we're all addicted to heroin and actually we go out to work and very often the police stop us and they make us do stuff to them and they nick our drugs and we're addicts, so we kind of have to keep on going out. Now, this isn't me bashing the police. This is me just saying,
this is
if at the end of the line it's like, Raoul Mote's a bad guy and these sex workers need to stop doing this, there is a lot of stuff going under the surface that we don't get to see if we're nice middle-class people who live in London, that those people are so disenfranchised about sort of living in council estates where they feel that the enemy is the establishment and the police.
No one's
got their back. And that has a lot to do with it, I think. That it's a really interesting, if anybody gets a chance and does lie in bed at night looking at Wikipedia. But the Raoul Mate story is a really, really interesting story. 50,000 people on Facebook going,
go Raoul.
Yeah, go Raoul, after he shot a policeman. That's not a Facebook problem.
49,000 of them were Gaza just building different profiles.
Yes.
Just like,
yes.
It's a really big fan, guys.
Yeah.
He's a really big
He's
fan.
Really into them. Yeah. But that's where kind of we need to be looking at stuff.
No.
Yeah.
Bloody right on. Good.
There you are. You have sorted it out, see?
Oh,
I knew you could do it.
Oh, good. Excellent.
I knew you could do it. That's why we had you on.
We gave him some cheap beer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stepped on his foot. Off he went.
You could look forward to a call from the government.
Thank you very much. What can I do? Because they make you a czar, don't they?
You'll just be Simon London, man.
Oh, will I? The Simon London czar.
We have appointed Simon London as Simon London.
Yeah. No worries.
Excellent.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Should we switch gear in a really awkward way?
Yes, let's
we'll
go
put
from
the advert there.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Then we're doing the
yeah, exactly right. Let's let's go back to comedy and career chat.
You've done a lot of telly, Simon London. What's been your favourite thing you've ever worked on?
Favourite thing I've ever worked on? Well, it have to be Graham Norton.
Oh.
Have to be Graham Norton. I was lucky enough to join the second series when it was so Graham Norton, Channel 4, and it was the most amazing chat show ever. I always say this about Graham. If you've got a semi-good guest, he makes him brilliant, or her brilliant. It makes the guest brilliant. And if you've got an awesome guest, like, then you'll just have an out-of-this-world sort of...
They will fly.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that first...
That sounds really familiar, actually. It's amazing.
Yeah, on that first... And if you've joined us after the knife crime and racism...
Simon London will be here.
I loved working with him. I worked with some two women that I really enjoyed working with, Watson and Oliver, and they should have been bigger. They should have been more French and Saunders. They should have sort of taken over from French and Saunders. Then, unfortunately, that didn't happen.
There's people in line.
Yeah.
Tim Vine is very good to work with. Yeah. Jimmy Carr.
No,
was...
listen, I don't want to hear all this.
Yes.
Come on, you know what we want to hear. Who were the bad ones?
Who
you can
were
say
the
someone
bad
who's dead,
ones.
It'd be fine.
Who's the bad? Really? Oh.
He knows.
You know something? This is awful. It's awful, but I'm going to tell this story.
Yes!
So...
The last time we heard that, it was a thing about Michael Bublé wanking in a hotel room. I can't wait.
Thank you, Andrew McLean.
This isn't going to be quite as good, but it sort of tells you every kind of thing you need to know about this person.
I'm getting
so
my wine.
We had Twiggy on the Graham Norton show. She's just been made a dame.
National treasure.
Yeah. And I remember that somebody had dropped out. Whoever booked her, they rang and they went, it's really good. She really wants to come on. She loves the show. She absolutely... adores the show. She really wants to come on, and also I think the fee of $5,000 in cash was quite attractive.
Doesn't
as
hurt.
Well.
Doesn't hurt.
So she came on the show.
So lots of hot pants you can get for $5,000. Yeah.
And part of the show is Graham goes, now we've been looking on the internet to see this, and we're going to call this person. And she went, oh no, I don't want to do the internet. You know, there's so much horrible stuff on the internet. And we're like, oh, and she went, I'll just turn my chair this way because I don't want to watch it. And I just remember thinking,
oh, this is gold. This is.
I just remember
amazing.
Thinking. Don't say you love the show and that you're a big fan when we do the internet every week. You've just basically taken the money. And also, what you're saying is ridiculous as well. I don't do the internet. I mean, imagine, it was that back in 2000. But even back in 2000, it wasn't all porn.
People still had email addresses.
Yeah, completely. My AOL Messenger.
It's all over MySpace.
And I kind of, every time she's on, I kind of find myself going, squigging. Which isn't a great one. I'll try and think of more.
No, I like it.
I'll try and think of more if you come up. But I do... We did have a Hollywood actress on once. And we wanted her to play a game at the end of the show. I'm not going to say who she is. But I will whisper it in a minute. And then you can just shout it out when I'm gone. And she was pregnant. Not very pregnant, but she was pregnant. And we wanted her to play this game at the end of the show, which was really stupid. It was Spaceman being... hung from the ceiling and weeing, and you had to the person who filled up the cup of Spaceman's wee the quickest.
Sounds
one.
Very sophisticated.
It's the Reithian dream.
Yes,
it's the Reithian dream.
So I had to go and knock on her door and went, oh, we're going to do this game and blah blah blah. And she went, I really don't want to do that, but I don't want to come across as being like boring and square. So could you ask him to ask me to play the game, and I'll say yes, and then at the last minute he goes, oh no, you're pregnant and it's probably not the great game for you to play. So I look as though I'm really fun, but I'm not.
Oh my god.
Can you get Graham Norton to fake my personality?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I went, okay, so I told Graham, oh, yeah, fine. Like, he's so easygoing. I'm sure he has people that are his favourites and he's not, but he's a complete and utter professional and he's really brilliant with it. And went, oh, if that's the way you want to play it. We kind of, I think a lot of us used to get more riled up on his behalf.
Because I always try and check his eyes, because when he's got like four people on the panel, it's like, surely you hate one of them. Surely you think that guy's a penis, that woman is just being... But he is so good.
I'm having that feeling right now. Yeah.
Can I take this badge off? I can't read it upside down. This Tanuk.
you know, and you've done it because you've interviewed people, you know within the first minute or so whether they're a complete arsehole.
Yes.
And whether you secretly want to be their best friends forever.
Well, yeah.
You
know,
or 5 or 6 years. It just depends. Sometimes you've got to give things a go. That's what I tell myself. You've got to give things a try. Keep going. It might get better, I say.
Pretty much all the people I've worked with in front of the camera are nice. It's the people behind camera who, it's just really difficult. And, you know, TV is a lot of old, white, middle-aged men commissioning stuff in their own image. And what's really nice, and I've found this, that's been great, is I'm a black guy, and so I tick that box, and then they can let me be in and on the party, but you're not allowed to get too far, because... that's not what it's like in that rarefied air. So there is kind
is
of
it
a...
like a glass ceiling?
Yes, definitely.
Right.
I remember going to one meeting when I was working on the lottery show, and I went to a meeting and Alan Yentob was there, and I walked in and it was just him and me, and he went, oh, thank God, because I can't get this overhead projector to work. That's how old it was back then. And I went, oh, right, well, I'll have a look at it and everything. So I kind of was having a fiddle, and then I said, oh, I can't get it to work either. And I sat down and he said, well, what are you doing? And we're like... another time, everyone knows the story works in telly, and I have kept quiet for 10 years. But another time, I made a pilot for another black person. We went in to talk to the controller of BBC Two about whether or not this pilot was going to be made, and she thought I was the black person whose the pilot had been made.
So
she sat there going... smiling at me. The people around me were like clenching. I could hear their asses clenching, to going, we've really enjoyed your pilot. And I was like, because I was producing it, I was like, I didn't get it first of all. I was like, oh, thank you, yes, it was really good, we really enjoyed making it. She went, it's really good. And then when somebody sat next to me went, have you seen Beep Stephen K. Amos, have you seen him live, have you seen this person live? And she said, looks at me and she goes, I've not been lucky enough to see you live, but if your pilot's anything to go by...
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God, she thinks I'm going to have to say something. Someone's going to have to say something. Somebody say... In the end, somebody did say something. And it was just awful. Oh. And it was... But that kind of... Yeah, that's difficult. I kind of look at the stuff I've done. So, like I said, I was a columnist on The Mirror, like, in my early 20s. Then I was a presenter. Then I was a producer on sort of some big shows and everything. I'm not bitter. Do I sound bitter, listeners? I'm not bitter.
I think you have the right to be fucking pissed off about that.
You kind bullshit. Of... I sort of am slightly peeved that... I feel that I've paid my dues and worked in a lot of areas and worked with a lot of people from the ground upwards, and yet there's not somebody like myself in that slightly... in that upper echelon, you know, that upper middle management thing.
Mm.
And I think... TV, I'm about to say TV suffers because of that. Not because of me, but TV suffers because there aren't more people like me called Simon London.
Simon London channel?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, we've had that. I mean, we've not had racism, but we've talked about on the Fortunately podcast before about how we have been told that our stuff is too womany, but by like 50-year-old white men who don't understand. I mean, as I say, we're white, but like, in case you haven't noticed, when you're being told no by three people who
aren't you,
and also don't understand your demographic and your thing,
and what difficult. You can represent and what you can bring to the fucking party,
and also you have to listen, you know, whether you want to or not. We were talking about David Lammy and the David Lammy argument. Now, David Lammy is a black guy of African descent. If anybody knows how black African people are feeling...
He's allowed to talk about
it. It's David Lammy. So when he
I've got some quite strong opinions, actually, which I'd like to voice now. I've tweeted him a few.
Yeah.
He's yet to respond.
So if that kind of... I sort of was trying to have this argument with somebody saying, if there was a woman working for... sort of a women's charity, you know, a women's charity, or maybe it's sort of a women's refuge or something like that, and a man came along and said, I think what this woman is doing and the way that she's doing it is terrible. Mm. People would probably turn around and go, Yeah, well, thanks for talking about it, but...
We welcome more feedback.
Yes, but, you know, it would be better if a woman was saying this, and David Lammy has sort of, because of the comic relief stuff, just to contextualise it, because of what he said it was about Stacey Dooley, white saviours, comic relief, and people turning around and going, right, because of you, I'm never giving to comic relief again, you're the racist... No, you don't say that. You go, he's in a good position to maybe know what people want, what people like. And
he's allowed.
Yeah, he's allowed. People are allowed to sort of say that if their life choices. What is it? Their life experiences. I'm touching them.
Well, it's difficult. I found that whole thing, the David Lammy, the comic relief thing, very difficult. You know, Helen and I did a trip last year to Nepal, and before we went, we had whole conversations about that. And is this just us as white people going to look at brown people? Is that weird? And we tried to manage it. We go and talk to the women in the village.
It's mothers to mothers. And we just wanted to hear their stories. You know, we didn't have any photos with children. We didn't show any children. And when we had photos with the other mothers, we all stood, you know, metaphorically and literally on the same level. Yeah.
Well, listen, I think...
What I'm saying is, tell us that's okay, Simon. Please say that's okay. You're now in charge of all. You're now in charge of stabbing. You're now also, I'm putting you in charge of white people going to countries or...
He's like their own Obama, Ellie. That's all I'm saying.
Listen, you go and you do... If it's from the right place and you're doing it for the right reasons, that just comes through.
Yeah.
That comes through. And unfortunately for Stacey Dooley, that image was... As much as it was great Instagram photo for her, it was also sort of slightly confusing for other people. It sort of did look a little bit like a fashion accessory. It did.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, for nine people out of ten, 90% of the people who are going off and doing charity, if it's coming from the right place and you're doing the right thing, it looks great. The bigger conversation that David Lammy wanted to have about comic relief, which is an interesting one, is... Don't they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result?
Yeah.
That's what they say. So if every 2 years, kind of famous white people go out and look at these things and cry a bit and that goes on the TV and yet we're doing it, at some point somebody's going to come around going, Jesus, isn't Africa fixed yet? You know, isn't it sort of what's going on? And I think he was right to raise... That's the first starting point. Now, as you guys know, I'm working at the moment for a TV channel that it's based in England, but it's sort of aimed at the West African diaspora and Nigerian in particular. And I'm the old man, and the kids who work under me, they're like 20, in some cases 30 years younger than me. And I said to them, "Well, what do you think of this Lammy thing?" And they went, "Yeah, we think he's right." And I went, "Why? Because it seems a bit mean, doesn't it, having a go at Stacey Dooley?" And they went, "Well, we're second generation Nigerians or Ghanaians, and we've grown up in London. And when we went back to Africa, to Nigeria or Ghana, the first time to see our cousins and aunts and uncles, because of the narrative of comic relief, we thought they all lived in mud huts. And actually we got there and they've got nice houses, they've got staff, they've got 2 or 3 cars, went to nightclubs and restaurants. And over there, there's quite a lot of food in certain places. And
very strong branch of Nando's.
I went, no.
Oh, I love the Waitrose, yeah.
Malaria nets. And they went, no, we actually have air conditioning. But please, somebody tell me there's no running water. Like, there's running water. And they went, but a lot of them thought they were going to go and see their cousins who lived in mud huts and villages and all. And they said, because that's the only way that Africa had been shown to them, and at Comic Relief. And so the next step from that was they kind of felt slightly inferior in that in the white community that they live in, all the white people do everything they can to help Africans. And so from this really early age, about 3, 4, 5 years old, they had sort of an inferiority complex. And listening to them talking about that... See, I don't have that, because I was raised by white people, and white people are great!
I mean, they're not my favourites.
No, but it's sort of... I was sort of thinking, wow, I've never really...
Yeah,
that's a really weird... I've never ever thought about that. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wow, these kids that I work with are really, really amazing. And they are, I know it sounds really awful, but they're kind of teaching me more about being black.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Because I don't hang around a lot of black people. You're not black, are you?
Well, I mean...
Oh, Ellie's husband once said she looked like a white Bill Cosby.
He did say that once, yeah. I don't say pre the allegations. Pre-allegations.
Yeah. When he was still nice. Right. When he was still a family guy.
But yeah. He said, someone's to make a face. We'll do it for you now. Don't laugh so hard.
He's allowed to, he's black.
Yes, I am. Stop dancing and take off that horrible sweater. Yeah.
Anyway, not funny.
No.
Comic Relief is brilliant. The people who work on it, because I've done it at the BBC a couple of times and worked on sort of various things, the people who work on it are brilliant and they love it and they work their bollocks off. And I actually went for a job at Comic Relief, which I didn't get.
Here she is.
You know...
Hands up to Comic Relief as well. I know that lots of people said, look, thank you for letting us know. We've learnt from this. And I don't think they haven't said, no, we're doing absolutely everything right.
Guys, I feel like, honestly, man, we've done so many hot potatoes.
I nearly sang Heal the World, but we can't do that. That's another show.
Such make another a better show. Place. Like, we've done knife crime, we've done racism, and people, like, pull you in for your kind of take. Is it parenting? Is it female feminism?
She's pretending to be perimenopausal to get on Lorraine.
I mean, yeah. As I said, I'm not proud, but there we are.
Shall we wind this up?
Yeah.
Shall we do a Scummy Mummy confession? It's basically a story of parenting failure, so it could be about, you know, it could be a poo or wee thing when they're kids.
Or like the time, say, for instance, my children came into the room after Will and I in the morning and said, but Mummy and Daddy, why aren't you wearing your pants? And we're like, we've just got very hot in the night.
But you kept your T-shirts on.
Why wouldn't you? It was December.
It was not good style.
And then did he say, now, children, leave the room whilst I get Helen out of the swing.
Let me unbuckle. I'll just take this mask off and put away the toys. Yeah,
that is Mummy, isn't it?
I wish it was true, Simon. I do. I wish it was true.
We're in Cornwall once and...
a lot of black on the people big there. Beach. Yeah. So many black people in Cornwall. Guys, you can't move for black people.
Oh, honestly, it's like you know Lagos.
Yeah,
imagine that.
All your jerk chicken.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, steel drums, the works.
Boney M were there.
Indeed.
Oh, I'm loving your Australian black people references. Fucking hell. Boney M. That's the best you could do. Boney M.
That's what Blair's black person
right, was. Tell you what, she's going to say Bob Marley. Yeah.
She can't remember him. It's too edgy. This eats me up inside. This still eats me up inside. Jo had made some... she'd made some pita breads, which she'd put bits of falafel and salad in, and she'd given one to our son. He was about 7, and he wandered off down the beach. He suddenly took a bite of it, and he came running down back to us going, Mom, my falafel has too much coriander in it. And I went... What are you saying? Don't say that out loud. Stop yelling. Stop saying that.
I'm gonna do some wee.
Stop saying that. And he's like, why? And I was like, just don't listen to me. Listen to you.
Talking about chips.
Listen to you. Anyway, I was watching Saturday. So I taped this for him last year. I was watching Saturday Kitchen, and they had their guest on it, whoever it was, and they said, "Oh, what's your kitchen? What's your heaven and what's your hell?"
Yeah.
And the guy went, oh, it's got to be coriander's my hell. He goes, because I'm in that weird 5% of people who, when I eat coriander, to me it just tastes like detergent or soap, and I can taste it in anything. And Elliot has been saying since he was 7, it tastes like soap. It's awful. Oh. And I've just been going...
Oh, come on.
I'm going, grow up!
Have your tabbouleh.
We are here to have a mezze, and you...
I don't care if you're mixed race, you're middle class, you will eat the goddamn coriander.
Yes.
I know.
Thomas Ian Myers has done a fine job on this guacamole.
If that is a name. And so I
Shelly
saw
butts,
it.
That's right. Shelly butts.
So I saw it because people who are allergic to stuff, you know, fatty eaters.
Yeah.
Fatty eaters they're not dull, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I don't know your background because I haven't bothered asking because it's all about me today. But in a children's home where there's loads of kids and they go, "Here's your food," everyone goes, "Ah!" It's like Lord of the Flies. So you don't have. As a rule, you're not allowed any allergies or anything. You might walk around with hives and sores and everything. Like you go, because like I said before, kids think everything's normal.
Yeah
completely.
That's a lovely jolly note to end on.
I know, it's a circle of life.
Oh, it's been a joy to have you. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. This has been really good fun.
Amazing.
It's been really good fun.
Thank you.
Can I take this cat suit off now?
Yeah.
Can I?
Yes, you can.
Because I don't know what this... Do you call it a camel toe when it's on a man?
I thought it was called the fly's eyes. Isn't that what you... Do you say that in the
fly's
UK?
Eyes?
You've got the fly's eyes.
Oh, what, if they've got like a...
Yeah, if you can see your balls.
That's like, how many balls do Australian men have? Guys have quite a lot of eyes.
We must end, Ellie.
We must end. Simon, where can people... Sorry. Simon London, where can people follow you?
I don't want to be followed. Okay. So
yeah. He loves an Instagram follower.
S London UK. Slondon UK.
Nice. Instagram. That's okay.
S London UK. Follow me at Twitter, but I will. But don't say anything silly to me because it's like a red rag to a bull. I can't help myself. Mm. And people have to text me. I have three friends who text me going...
Babes.
Stop now, Simon. Stop now.
We've all done it.
We've all got too involved.
Please follow us at Scummy Mummies. And, you know, come and see a live show, scummymummies.com.
And we're doing tickets. All of Edinburgh, all of it, Ellie. Mm. We're at the Assembly Rooms at 7.
Shut up. Okay. We are going to Scotland. That's all we know.
We'll be in Edinburgh all of April. Or no, August.
Oh, my word. It's like the worst ad ever.
Okay. So, Dublin, can't wait to see you. We'll be there for Christmas. In an O'Neill's.
7:50 at the Assembly Rooms in Edinburgh from the 31st of July to the 26th of August.
Scummy Mummies, thank you very much. It's been good fun. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Simon. Okay. London. Thank you.
Do we now stop talking?
Yes, we do. But then we have to say until next time, and then we say goodbye, and then we have to wave at the microphone. Can you... Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now we have to embrace.
Yeah. And then we get it.
Stop being funny. Okay, all right. Recording.
I know we've got. What am I wearing today, Ellie? What lingerie? I've got a Marks and Spencer.
Why are you asking me? Like we actually stick together?
No, but Simon wants to know.
Fantasy, at some point, go for a break and come back and go.
FantasyLingerie.com. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
I'm wearing Marks and Spencer's bra and Sainsbury's knickers.
Oh.
What happens if you get knocked? What happens if she gets knocked down by a car or something? We can't take her in.
It's not enough. She hasn't thought this through, Simon.
I thought you were going to say, what happens if she gets lucky? And of course, that would never fucking be on tonight. Their mind.
And this is what guys do when women have nice lingerie on. They go, I hope she's going to take that off.
When we first got together, I was like quite into the old sexy lingerie. And after a while, he was like, I just like it when it comes off. Yeah. Really, I just keep, it's like oh, it's nice wrapping paper, but
really, now,
you do it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.